Okay, it is my great pleasure to welcome Professor Stephen Coleman of the University of Leeds. Thank you very much for agreeing to do this interview with me, Stephen.
It's my pleasure. I'm pleased to be involved with this journal.
Thank you. Well, I wonder if we can start by you probably letting the readership know more about what you do at Leeds and sort of what you've been recent projects.
Well, we have the Centre for Digital Citizenship, which is a collaboration between technologists and social scientists to ask the same questions but in different ways. The questions are primarily about how citizen participation in governance at various levels, both at the official national level, but also supranational levels, global campaigns of one kind or another, and institutions, how these forms of participation can be facilitated in a meaningful and consequential way using technologies that one might call post-broadcast technologies, that is to say, the internet and some of the things around the internet. Now, the social scientists are raising questions for the technologists along the lines of, can you come up with ways in which we can structure discussion to make it more deliberative, to make it more inclusive, to make it more meaningful and consequential? The technologists are very often coming back to the social scientists and saying, can you tell us what's the consequence of changing this bit of the technology? What's the consequence of using a mobile phone rather than a desktop computer? So this is a dialogue, and everything we're doing involves this interaction between disciplines where we both assume that we have an incomplete knowledge of what we're really talking about. And the sort of projects that we work on range from working with governments to try to help them to create policy making where using the internet they can gather public experience and expertise, of which there is a huge amount outside of government, to refine legislation so that there is scrutiny by the public and not just by elected representatives. We look at the effect on representative institutions. A lot of my work over the years has been trying to understand how we would reinvent representative institutions as 20th and now 21st century bodies rather than just living with the legacy of what are essentially 19th century bodies on the whole. And we do work there. We do work with local communities, trying to understand how communities can talk about the things that concern them, not only geographical communities, but also communities of practice, communities of passion, where people who have in the past been dispersed across distances can talk to each other about particular issues. And everything that we do is always around the question of how do we democratize existing processes. How do we inject into them various norms which we're constantly arguing about? They're not fixed, uncontested norms in our mind, but they are norms of democratization. That is to say, of giving confidence to citizens to take power and speak in their own name rather than be spoken for. That, I think, is one of the most important objectives for our centre.
Well, that sounds brilliant. It also sounds to me that it's a kind of a long debate,
yes,
that has been kind of revitalised because of the new technologies and,
yeah,
new means of addressing those issues. And I wonder if you can comment on this new buzzword that has come out recently, and that's e-deliberation. And I wonder if you can specifically try to define it in sort of three perspectives, and they come from your first comment, and that is in relation to the government of any country, to the commercial sector of the economy, but also to our kind of academic discipline. We can probably reserve the last one,
yeah,
as a separate question.
Yeah. Well, deliberation is essentially about the assumption that we do not know the answers to lots of key questions and challenges that face us. That this ranges from throwing our hands in the air and saying, I don't even understand the question, which of course sometimes happens to governments when they're faced with pandemics or when they're faced with terrorist threats. Very often they don't even understand where something is coming from, why it's there, climate change, whatever. Or our preferences are incomplete because we want lots of different things at the same time. You know, I want a faster route to work, but I also want to conserve the countryside, so I don't want roads built. So very often we have inconsistent preferences. And deliberation is about sorting out those uncertainties, anxieties, inconsistencies, not just within one person, but amongst whole polities, and asking the question, how can you, by shifting the preferences that you have, make sure that the values that you have are well served? Now, at a government level, that is very important, because governments have really changed enormously, I think, over the last century. 100 years ago, rather less than 100 years ago, governments were essentially always asking the same questions as the last government that was in power. You know, how do you protect the borders? How do you maintain a certain degree of economic stability? How do you maintain markets? So on. Increasingly now, the most important questions that governments face are risk questions. They're questions that come at them from apparently from nowhere, and where all the expertise is somewhere else. So deliberation is really important, because you don't have standard, simple, ideological foundations to rest upon. You've got to simply go out and talk about it. And there is a sort of common sense argument, which is the wider you talk about it, the better things are. Now, when you mention the commercial sector, that's very interesting. The commercial sector are ahead of government. They realize that if you want to sell a brand, the first thing you do is you get people talking about it. And you get people talking about its defects, and then you try to get rid of the defects. If you want to try to understand how you are perceived in the world, the best way is to get people talking about you. Governments are still somewhat locked in, and particularly political parties, are locked into this mindset which says, we will dictate how people see us. It's called impression management. We will be visible, but only on our terms. But increasingly, the commercial sector, and now I think some of the political sphere as well, is aware that visibility is something you can't control. You know, if I walk down the street and I don't look like a nice person, the solution to that is not to persuade people that I do look like a nice person, but to look like a nice person. So governments that are acting anti-socially are never going to get away with it simply through spin. And deliberation is a very good way of creating a democratic opportunity for them to work out what sort of things they're doing that aren't working and what sort of things would work, and how you get the buy-in from lots of people. Because one of the things about risk, which I was speaking about, is that risk is always dependent upon human behavior adaptation to be overcome. You think of climate change as one of the biggest threats facing societies today. There's no way we can solve climate change by passing a law. You can have every government sitting in the United Nations or sitting in the Security Council of the United Nations declaring unanimously that they want climate change to go away. It won't go away. So what has to happen is people have to change, businesses have to change, the nature of competition has to change. To make all of that happen requires a massive degree of consent, and that consent is probably not going to come simply by telling people they must consent. It has to come out of discussion and argument.
Stephen, I wonder if we can sort of keep the issue of e-deliberation and academic disciplines for just a bit later. May I just inject another kind of trajectory for the conversation, and that is to comment on what you're saying, to highlight that many things that you put forward I would define as elements of culture or societal social practices. And I wonder if that stream of knowledge or that stream of thinking actually kind of finds its way into e-deliberation in any way.
Not enough. You're absolutely right. Your point is very well put. And I mentioned before this alliance that we've constructed between technologists who, frankly, don't have a wonderful history of thinking about culture, and social scientists who, at their worst, because they tend to want to be seen as white coat scientists, tend not to be too perceptive about culture. Now, everything that we are talking about, the nature of language, the nature of how you communicate, the nature of rhetorical persuasiveness, all of these within deliberation are fundamentally cultural questions. And one of the things that I hope that I and those who think like me bring to this debate is an understanding that we have to think first of all about the making of citizenship, the cultural shaping of all of these terms. What does it mean to argue? You know, if you are brought up in a family where to argue means that it's always going to end in tears, possibly in somebody being hit, then argumentation is never going to become a civilized part of your life. If, on the other hand, you're brought up to see argument as the vivacity of the, you know, the dinner table, throwing around arguments, disagreement and dissensus arriving at better ideas, then you will like it. This is a cultural question. The very nature of who sits at the top of the table, the very question of where this takes place, the very question of whether deliberation can involve those people who you might think initially have absolutely nothing that ought to be heard. Do you have a debate about the future of crime that involves criminals? If you don't involve criminals, then are you missing out on something?
Well, Stephen, if I can just interrupt you for a second and suggest another way of looking at it, that is to say, talking about cultural practices, we're sort of trying to look at different structures of knowledge, different structures of power. Does that also imply that this concept of e-deliberation will differ when it's applied to different national contexts, different cultural contexts?
Oh, I think inevitably, because I think one of the most important things about spaces of deliberation is that those spaces are always surrounded by a history that preceded them, and they're also always surrounded by the assumption that history is going to go on after them, and therefore, you know, to have a deliberation in the context of, for example, a very peaceful, affluent society, one that might see itself as being a leading power in the world, then the kind of deliberative process that one might have there about, let's say, welfare or the economy is going to be very different from one in which there is a widespread mistrust of government, in which there is not high interpersonal trust. So I think actually understanding the cultural specificity of particular cultures is really important, particularly, incidentally, in these post-Soviet cultures, which are so marked by pre-Soviet history, by aspirations of what they see themselves becoming, and also, I think, to a very great extent, by a sort of misunderstanding from the rest of the world about what they are at the moment.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. So may I just kind of ask the last question and actually take us back to one of the things I raised in the middle of the conversation, and that is the relation of this concept of e-deliberation to the academic discipline. So where does it sort of belong on the intellectual university map?
Well, I think to some extent we are creating a new sub-field. I wouldn't call it an entire field, but I think we're doing what all universities should be doing right now, and that is bringing departments that in the past hadn't spoken to each other to work together. So I think that in any university you would want the technologists to get away from their tools for a little while and start to be challenged by the social scientists. But at the same time, you'd want the technologists to challenge the social scientists, and indeed, you'd then want the people from the arts, from cultural studies, coming in and challenging the social scientists and the technologists and saying, hey, there's a lot more going on all around of this. You would want the geographers. You would want the historians. So I think this is a multidisciplinary field. I think its future is there. I think it is one in which universities can demonstrate that we have something serious to say to society about one of its currently most pressing problems, which is a problem of disengagement and failure of trust and a failure of efficacy. And I think it's an area in which there is some tremendously good scholarship. I mean, I was amongst that group of people who, not so long ago, of course, were seen as being a bit eccentric in getting involved in all of this. And I can still remember going to places where one would talk to journalists and they would say, ah, the internet's going to go away. One would talk to politicians and they would say, well, if we ignore it for long enough, nobody's going to use it. Nobody says that anymore. But what is interesting is that in turn, there is a new generation of younger scholars who are coming up who don't see the internet as something new or exotic. They just see it as something that is part of life. Everybody's on Facebook. You can't. So just as in the early part of the 20th century, when people used to write about the telephone, they used to do it within the context of special studies of the telephone. By the late 20th century, the telephone was implicated in every study. The internet's moving that way. And if we are going to be moving in a direction of how one creates a more culturally as well as politically cohesive society, then the concept of e-deliberation should actually be quite a priority amongst our intellectual studies.
Excellent. Thank you very much indeed, Stephen, for this thought-provoking conversation, and we look forward to more.
Thank you very much for inviting me. Thanks.
Thank you.